AFP Audio is today talking to Matthew Peters, who's a Professor of Respiratory Medicine at the Australian School of Advanced Medicine, Macquarie University in Sydney. Hi, Matthew.
Good afternoon.
So, Matthew has written for AFP a focus article that appears in the November 2012 issue titled Towards an Endgame for Tobacco. This is a different type of article for AFP in that it considers the important issue of tobacco control and hopefully a tobacco endgame. It's everyone widely understood that there's significant harms of smoking, and currently Australia's in the process of changing to plain packaging. This article challenges us about the options for further decreases in smoking. So to start off, Matthew, what do we know about current rates of smoking in Australia?
We know that we've been successful in reducing the headline rates of smoking to around 15% of the adult population. That's, you know, fantastic from where we were 20, 30 or 40 years ago. But 15% of the Australian population still amounts to 3 million smokers. So we've got a challenge ahead of us, and we need sort of adventurous and different thinking, I think, to get where we want to be, which is to get smoking rates in the broader community down somewhere near the medical community.
Which I think the article says is sort of 3% 15 years ago, and we suspect probably lower now. And so the idea of aiming for a zero smoking rate, is that a suggestion that's unique to Australia?
The whole idea of getting down to very low rates has become a discussion point for countries where rates have got close to us. There's no point talking about zero if 70% of your population smokes. But once you get down to around 15 to 20%, like California, like Australia, like New Zealand on average, because obviously they've got niche populations with very substantially higher smoking rates than that. But once you get around to 15%, then you start thinking, what's the next step? Where can we protect the last 15% of smokers, or the last 15% of the population, from the harms of smoking?
Yep. And so the article raises a whole lot of possible ways of achieving that. One approach that it talks about is an outright ban with pre-warning. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, this is always the one that comes up in discussion, and you see it in the letters column from time to time. You know, if a doctor's hate smoking so much, why don't you just go out and ban it? But it's a bit clumsy, and prohibition generally doesn't have a very successful record, whether it's, you know, drugs of addiction, other drugs of addiction, or alcohol. So, you know, it would be entirely possible for the government to say, you know, in March 2014, no more cigarettes will be sold. But I don't think that's likely to be a simple or effective solution.
No, and the article mentions an idea from some Singaporean academics whereby basically people would be, based on their birth date, not able to buy.
The Singaporean proposition is a very interesting one. In essence, when it was first floated, and I first talked to these people about 5 years ago, the notion then was that if you were born after the year 2000, you would never be able to purchase cigarettes. That deals with the issue of the existing smoking population, because it wouldn't deny them any rights. Everybody wants to protect children, so it has that warm and cuddly feel about it. It's a good incremental solution. It may be part of the eventual solution, but You want to do something about the existing smoking group and not just the future one.
Yep. And so another possible method that the article mentions is basically cost increases, which may or may not be related to sort of decreases in access. What are the types of strategies in that type of approach?
The Preventative Health Task Force recommended to government substantial increases in taxation. We've had the first one of those, and hopefully soon the federal government will deliver on the second of those. We know that taxation reduces the pattern of use, and it's probably the single public health strategy that the tobacco industry worries about the most. Increases in the price of tobacco are complementary to some of the other things that we might do, particularly if we change the product itself. So definitely taxation should be part, increased pricing through taxation should be part of what we do, and will, as it has done in the past, substantially reduce the amount of smoking that goes on.
And it's not such a radical change from what we're doing. So it's probably, from a government perspective, a relatively nice and easy one to implement.
It is. And look, a number of charities, you know, St. Vincent de Paul, the Brotherhood of St. Lawrence, the Salvation Army, for a long time had a reasonably well-founded or well-based belief that taxation was harmful to the poor and therefore a cruel tobacco control strategy. But those groups in the whole are now understanding that, in fact, tax increases by encouraging the poorer segments of the community to entertain cessation are actually better for them than overall harmful. So overall, you do more good in that part of the population where smoking is now concentrated, which is the least wealthy groups.
Yep. And one of the mentions that you made before was about additives in smoking. So the article points out that the many things that cigarettes containing, whilst tobacco is one of them, there's additives from cinnamon to ammonia. What are some of the options around changing behaviour based on additives?
Modern tobacco is one of the best engineered products on sale. It's incredibly well researched. The tobacco industry had much more skills in understanding their product and its later marketing than the ethical pharmaceutical industry had during the 50s and 60s. And the modern cigarette, modern tobacco, is a precision product with precisely controlled levels of tar, nicotine, and a whole variety of additives that the individual role of which may not be ever be known to us, but we know that the collective maintains the current cigarette as a reasonably tolerable, highly addictive product. It leads from that if we were able to restrict the way in which tobacco could be reformulated, that we would either get a less addictive or a less tolerable product, and that would have a beneficial effect on the number of people smoking.
Yep. And so another option for regulation that comes up is about nicotine availability and delivery. What are some of the key elements in that option?
The idea of drastically reducing nicotine availability is, I think, core to an end game. The tobacco industry have proved through their own research that an ultra-low delivery nicotine cigarette just is not used on an ongoing basis. Smokers don't smoke it. So if we can, and certainly the technology is available, reduce nicotine levels in tobacco, if we can prevent the manipulation of smoke pH that enhances the availability of nicotine, whatever amount of nicotine there be. And we can do this not by asking that the tobacco be specially manufactured in a different and complex way, but just by asking the tobacco industry to not do what they're doing now. A very low delivery nicotine cigarette, which is unpleasant and unrewarding and expensive, is going to be bought in much, much lesser volumes, and we might get close to extinguishing the tobacco industry or tobacco use.
Indeed. And so then the last option that the article raises is a tobacco industry buyout. What would that involve?
This has been floated by some Canadian economists who've done the sums. Essentially, the tobacco industry is a commercial operation. It has a capital base and makes a profit. So if we could determine what a reasonable capital base might be based on current activity, reasonable projections, then we just pay them and tell them to go away and do something useful with their money. And then we retire the tobacco industry so that none is ever manufactured in the future. I think that's an unlikely scenario, but it's an interesting one to think about. And also to think about just how many people die for the amount of dollars that are made in profit. It's small. For some of the recently published profits of the Australian tobacco companies, we're talking about profit of only a few hundred dollars for every person who dies from the tobacco-related disease. So the economics just don't stack up at a community level. This industry is killing people for very low profits. So why would we want it?
It's an interesting question, and I mean, it's interesting that, say, even economists are coming to sort of this area, which you probably have more traditionally thought of about public health and clinicians being interested in.
there's a commerce and health interface here, and we have to be knowing of that. Another economic approach is the concept of cap and trade, where we'll cap the amount of tobacco that will be sold and progressively reduce that cap. It's called the sinking lid. And this sort of thinking is aligned to what we're doing with carbon trading and trying to reduce carbon dioxide emissions. The economists have got some ways of helping us deal with this.
Indeed. So in conclusion, what are a couple of key messages that you hope a reader recalls from this article?
The critical message is that we can do without smoking, and that there are simple ways that are known to us that we could implement that would very drastically reduce the amount of smoking in the community. And we know, even just this week from the release of the Million Women study, how much the benefits of smoking cessation are, and how further we would benefit if we could never deliver to a child a tolerable addictive cigarette, so that child could never become addicted. It'd be a great future investment in the health of our community. You've got a dream.
Indeed. So thank you very much for speaking to us today, and I'll remind people that the full article can be found in the November 2012 edition of Australian Family Physician.
It's been a great pleasure.